You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where everything we've said for 8 years is wrong because other people say so. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, and I would like to welcome you to the Gaslight Nation edition of Welcome to the Midside. And the reason I'm calling it that, and the reason I'm being explicit, because I almost never call out the show titles on the show themselves, the episode titles on the show itself, is because I have noticed something through my own experience, because I have felt something that I haven't felt in years. The last time I felt this was with the movie Man of Steel. And if you're a longtime listener, you will remember that my experience with Man of Steel is I would go see the movie and have this wonderful, amazing experience and have this judgment of the movie. Then I would go online or I would talk to other people about it, and they would talk about it like it is the worst fucking movie that ever was in existence. And they would actively be trying to convince me of that. Well, I am having the same experience right now with everything that is going on in the United States of America. When I go outside, everything is normal. It's like there's no coronavirus, there's no white supremacy, there's no systemic racism. But then I go online, or even it's even to the point now that I have conversations with other people besides sort of my, you know, group of midsiders, I'll call them, you know, Daniel, William, Michael, any other friends I've talked to about this situation. Besides talking to them, it's like there's a whole different world people are living in. So I see us now as a gaslight nation, where if you dare to say there's no white supremacy in this country, or there are people who are white supremacists, but they do not have any real power in this country, people will gaslight you, essentially. And that creates a problem, because even me just having said that, they'll gaslight me or gaslight you by calling me a white supremacist. Oh, he would only deny it because he is a white supremacist. He's internalized white supremacy, and that's the point we're at. And that's why I call us now a gaslight nation, because you either agree with somebody else's view of the world, even if it's incorrect, or they tell you they're the insane one, or they tell you you're the insane one. Sorry, I jumped ahead of myself, because the real issue here is they're the insane ones. So they're the insane ones, and they're calling you insane. And that is the point of discourse. That is the level of discourse we've reached in the United States of America, the Gaslight Nation. All right, let's move on here and introduce our hosts. And it's an important introduction this episode, because joining us from our nation's capital for the last time ever, question mark, because I feel like it's like when a band goes on hiatus, you know, that's a breakup, but they don't want to call it a breakup. So when somebody uses hiatus, I go, Daniel T. Richards.
Gaslight Nation either sounds like a great pop punk band or a late night Fox News show hosted by Greg Gutfeld. So it's a good name there.
Well, those are two things I love, right? So...
Yeah, well, it's good to be here on this journey, this trip into the midside, perhaps for the last time, but I doubt it's for the last time ever. It might be for a while, a long while, in fact, or I might be more sporadic or something, but I don't know if it's quite a breakup. I have nothing to break up with you about. I, if anything, have grown to be a little more pop-punk-ish overall in my time here on the midside, so I thoroughly enjoy doing this show. It's just a matter of prioritizing values and trying to move on to a new project and figuring out where I can make time for that. And unfortunately, this was one of the places I needed to make time, one of the things I needed to let go of, despite the fact that I enjoy doing it, for the time being.
Well,
we all
have
those moments in life, so.
We're definitely going to miss you, and I can't wait for you to listen to your first episode of The Midside.
I do look forward to it. I have been subscribed for years. I've just always, when it pops up with a little blue dot on my podcast app, I just click mark as read or listen to, whatever it is. So it's fun. Sad. I've had emotions about it today. It's been interesting.
Do you want to talk at all about the project you're making time for?
Oh, that. Yes. Yeah, I'm happy to do that just very briefly. I don't want to give away too much about it, but the short version, drumroll please, is that, like everyone else, I'm writing a book. Hooray! I know that wasn't very exciting in the end in terms of why I would take a hiatus, but I need to actually write it, like actually write it, and that does take time. And so I'm making time for myself to do that. And part
it's
of it
gonna
is
be a, it's going to be a book, a collection of Walker joke stories, right?
That's right. I'm just going to collect all the past headlines we've done into a giant compendium of Walker joke. No, the tentative title of the book is Change Your Own Damn Mind, a snarky guide to persuading yourself on all sorts of things. And it's going to be a book, but I'm going to do it, Justin, in the vein of one of my heroes, Edward Tufte, who could not find a publisher to do the book in terms of content and design the way that he personally wanted to do it. And so he did it himself. That's kind of what I'm doing. So the book will be laid out different from other books. It'll be designed differently from other books. It'll be sort of innovative, I hope, but also incredibly useful for people, and delve into a topic that I think gets brushed over too much, which is our obligation to ourselves to be audiences, and what that means, and what that means for persuasion and rhetoric. Since all of the talk in persuasion and rhetoric is about how we change other people's minds, I thought it's time to delve into, well, how the F should I change my own mind about certain things? So
I enjoy
that's the thing.
That you said you didn't want to give away the book, and then you just gave away the book.
It's long. It'll be long. There'll be plenty in there that's not given away.
Are you self-publishing?
How you do that? I don't know if I'm self-publishing, but I'm not seeking traditional publishing, if that makes sense.
Put out by the Midside Press.
Also, who would give me traditional publishing at this point? But
the Midside Press.
Yeah. Midside Publication. No.
Maybe.
We don't have a marketing arm. I mean, if you want to run the Midside version.
Wait, I am the marketing arm.
If only we had someone on the staff that did social media for a living.
So that's it. There may be other parts of this project that come out of it. I don't know yet. All to be announced. Follow me at Daniel T. Richards on Twitter or wherever. I don't care. It's fine. I'll let you know about it somehow. And it'll be good. It'll be a good journey for me.
Man, now we need a new drummer. Drummers are hard to find. See what
ironically,
I did there?
Ironically, also a drummer in real life.
That was the joke. All right.
Okay. I don't know if people knew that. By the way, speaking of Walker joke, we were tentatively scheduled to do a Walker joke for this show, and then Justin forgot, so it didn't get put in the outline. And then I have that low self-esteem thing where I'm like, well, I guess we're not doing it because Justin didn't put it in the outline. For some reason, he didn't want to. But I've decided impromptu that throughout the show, I'm just going to interject some of the collection of headlines that I had saved up for a final Walker joke. We won't do an official game, but I'll just throw a couple out there every once in a while throughout the show as they relate to what we're talking about, I think.
To be fair to me, and I didn't want to rain on your parade because because you brought it up and called me out, I am also writing a book. And because
what?
I've been focused on that, I forgot, because that's where all my energy is going. Like, literally this morning, I knew I wanted to write a chapter. And I knew the basics of it. Like, I'm going through, it's a novel, it's fiction. So I'll be like, okay, I'm going to do from this character's perspective in this chapter. Or I'll have multiple scenes in this chapter and they'll be from X, Y, and Z character's perspective. But I don't necessarily know what's going to happen or what's going to the character's going to think or say beyond, you know, one major event or something. Like there was one event where I was like, okay, that quote that character is going to say, and I built the chapter around that. So this morning when I woke up, my entire brain was not podcast, podcast, podcast. My entire brain was food. Oh, this is all the things you're going to say in this chapter, and here's the research you need to do. And then once I ate and did the research, it just came out. So that's why I forgot. It wasn't anything about you.
Mm-hmm. Way to step on it, Justin. William, are you
also
writing a book?
About that book coming soon.
Just to be clear.
I think I feel obligated now at this point.
Also joining us from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. As some of you know that are in our Discord at themidside.com in the show notes of every episode, I on Tuesday was confused and angered by the fact that I couldn't play any of my Apple Music and instead was presented with in steadfast support of the black voices that define music, creativity, and culture. We use ours. This moment calls upon all of us to speak and act against racism and injustice of all kinds. We stand in solidarity with black communities everywhere. The show must be paused. Black Lives Matter. So as you can imagine, I was frustrated. I went through several stages of grief. I think after the anger, I decided I was incredibly hungry for some Chick-fil-A because at least they don't make me pray before I order. But when that initial thing went by, I was like, well, cool. All right, let me find some racism so I can call it out. So here we go. So if you guys remember, the Michigan protests happened. Some people were protesting the draconian restrictions in Michigan against COVID-19. And, you know, they were called a lot of things. Fringe, crazy, and also people advocating for death. So here's Al Sharpton, Al Sharpton's take on that.
First of all, we're talking about the preserving of life. These governors that have had a stay-home order are doing it for our health. We're not talking about them doing something punitive. They're doing something that would be preventive of people getting very sick or, in fact, facing death.
So, you know, slingshot of we all whip around to the you know, Minnesota riots, Sharpton of course shows up to speak there. He is removing his mask as he's about to take the stage, but I couldn't help but catch this racism. So here we go. Are you ready to see if you can catch this racism so we can all call it out together?
Here,
we want to make
yes.
sure this is heard. Once again, we thank you all for being out here. We thank you for the atmosphere that you all have already set. We feel the energy. We feel the prayers. We feel our ancestors. We thank you for that. We want to remain safe. Our two choices should not be COVID-19 or the MPD. So we need to take COVID-19 off the record right now by social distancing ourselves as best as possible. White allies, if you're out here, thank you. Thank you. We want you to align with us right now by having your body on the line and being on the perimeter, allowing our black elders the space so that they can be safe in this space.
Amen.
If you need a mask, let us know. We have plenty of them.
So anyone catch the racism in there? Daniel?
Yeah.
I think so, but I don't know what racism is anymore. So,
are we allowed to call true. That out? Am I split? Like, I'm following
Daniel
the hashtag, right? Am I doing
understand.
It right? Am I doing
no,
it right?
No, you can't call no. out racism. You're white, and Daniel can only half call out racism. So, if Daniel has a half guess, we can go with that. But I'm not allowed to speak on racism, and you're not, William.
Okay, so we'll just so I'm not doing it right.
My no. half guess is that time when the person said. That's all. That was the half sentence that you gave.
Ah, well, well, I was going to say, if you think I'm pulling this out of context, the clip goes on for about 30 minutes, and she's doing this for about 50 minutes before Sharpton comes out. And, of course, he removes his mask to make his speech. No one's wearing a mask. Well, a good third of the people around him aren't wearing masks. And dutifully enough, all those white people are, forming a line to protect them from the police, presumably? I don't know, but I thought there was a order about large gatherings, but at, I don't know. I'm not going to, apparently I don't know how to call it racism, but that was my attempt. So let me know in Discord if you think I, how I could better improve and call out racism when I see it.
Woke or joke? Sorry, white people, but trying too hard not to be racist is low-key kind of racist. Justin?
Well, that's woke.
William?
It's a joke.
It is 100% woke from babe.net by Told Katie you. Way.
These Just are easy. Anyone about race is easy. Anything that is, if you're white, anything you're doing is racist, that's a woke article.
we'll have more throughout the show, but
it's racism 22. No matter what you do as a white person, it's racist. I mean, there was that article that came out this week that got taken down on Medium that I don't even know if it was real or not. It was Schrodinger's parody, because it could have been parody, it could have been real, and it was the idea of if white women commit suicide because they're guilty over being racist, because they feel guilty over being racist, that act is racist. Because you're taking away attention from the struggle of black people.
Okay.
It's but William, the clips you played, before we move on real quick, the whole hypocrisy over the coronavirus and the gathering thing is the least interesting point to me about all of this. And it's the most basic argument, I think. Yeah. Where it's like, oh, they're being hypocrites because they're going out in crowds. Say what you will about them.
I think hopefully you see that that is just the small pebble, right? The lever here is the race baiting, right? That's why I picked Al Sharpton. That's why I picked those two clips. It's not the corona, like you said, the coronavirus thing. I could care less. Obviously, I supported people protesting in Michigan, and I support the people who are peacefully protesting now. The point I'm trying to make is the media's incredible race baiting here. There's this it goes into your point you were making about the bizarro world online. It's the bizarro world in the mainstream media too. There's just this bizarro world that they live in. They see through this funhouse mirror that distorts reality, and it's distorting reality worse and worse.
Yes, and I was remiss. I should have mentioned the mainstream media as part of Gaslight Nation, because they've been gaslighting for years. They've gotten worse. That's definitely my entire life. It's gotten worse in my life. So why don't we go into that funhouse mirror in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Well, before we get to the news this week, why don't you go to patreon.com/themidside and sign up to be a Patreon supporter. It very much helps the show keep the lights on. Last time I get to say that for a while. All right, well, let's start with a little bit of coronavirus news. I know, I think coronavirus is supposed to be over now or something, but
we canceled it for being racist. We canceled it for being racist.
Apparently, yeah, I don't think it's over. I think it's only used when they want to guilt people into staying inside.
That. Well, I think coronavirus is canceling itself in a certain way, maybe because it feels like it's a virus. Or, I'm sorry, like a racist virus? Unclear. But according to the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, Dr. Donald Yeely, the coronavirus appears to be declining in potency and people are catching it less easily. So doctors at the University of Pittsburgh held a press conference where they talked about some of the evidence that they've been seeing in regards to treating patients and whatnot. And he noted that the virus may be changing. Some patterns suggest the potency is diminished. He noted that UPMC has successfully treated more than 500 coronavirus patients since March. And in recent weeks, fewer patients are requiring ventilators to help them breathe. Less than 4% of all tests and only 0.2% of tests in asymptomatic patients are coming back positive, he said, indicating that the virus is less prevalent in the communities UPMC serves. The doctor's findings that the virus could be declining in potency came days after researchers in Italy announced that patients there were showing much smaller amounts of the virus in their system compared to samples taken during the peak of the crisis in March and April. Professor Alberto Zangrillo, I don't know, it's Italian. That'll be my last mispronunciation for a while as well. Head of intensive care at Italy's San Raphael Hospital Lombardy went so far as to say that the virus clinically no longer exists during a Sunday interview on state television. But of course, where would an article about the virus be without a statement from the World Health Organization, who said there's no evidence to support these claims, and they say in terms of transmissibility, there has been no change. In terms of severity, no change. Maria Van Kerkhove said. She's an epidemiologist. So, Justin, what is going on here with your epidemiology degree? Why don't you enlighten us?
I didn't know you were going to ask me to talk about epidemiology. I mean, that's like a whole other lifetime away. You really want me to go backwards in time and
remember? I know. I mean, it's time to come out of retirement and talk about some epidemiology. We've all been waiting for you to have one last rodeo.
Just okay. Kidding. Well,
what
how about this?
What's going on?
Could it be possible that the people who were most likely to contract the disease and it was going to, or the virus, and it was going to be more severe for them, caught it already? Wouldn't it make sense over time that the people who are most vulnerable catch it first and the people who are least vulnerable catch it last or not at all? Wouldn't that make sense?
Makes too much sense. In fact, I'm reminded, if anyone can think back all the way to March, which was the longest month in my lifetime, there was a cruise ship, remember, where there was an outbreak of coronavirus? And it turns out that 20% of the people on the cruise ship got the coronavirus and 80% did not. And even though there was, it was as the, its most potent back then or whatever, it seems like a lot of diseases, especially coronaviruses, run this pattern as well, where it's like there's a certain percent who are going to get it and a certain percent who basically are not going to get it under any circumstance. And I'm certainly not an epidemiologist. I'm just looking at what appears to be happening in the world. And maybe there's some explanation that I don't know. But yeah, I think there's something to what you're saying there.
Yeah, and Midsider Conrad shared that study. There's a whole study on that cruise ship. It's very interesting. He shared it with me personally. So you can go look for that. Not Midsider Conrad. Don't look for him. Look for the result. People are going to start. What's it called when you reveal someone's identity and their address? Not dox Midsider Conrad. But go look for the results of that cruise study. It's very interesting. It's very, very interesting. And the other thing, Daniel, when you're saying, you know, we're not epidemiologists, but if you look at what's happening, how about if you look at what has happened in the history of the world? Isn't the pattern this virus is following the same pattern every virus follows?
Yeah, William, I think what's funny about our discussion of viruses is that we talk about them mutating and how it's like going to destroy us all because we think about movies like Contagion and Outbreak, where the virus, it's airborne now. When in
the
fact,
happening.
The happening. Oh my God, I try to forget that movie and then you bring it up. 5% more relevant now to the conversation. Anyway,
I had to bring it up. If this is, you know, your goodbye show, I gotta bring that
up. Thank you. But what we see in real life, William, is that viruses tend to mutate, but they tend to mutate in a way that makes them weaker and die out. This is basically what happened with SARS and MERS, I believe. So
what happened with frankincense?
Oh my God. Worst joke ever in the history of the Midside.
Sure, farewell.
William?
Yes?
Say what's something. Anything.
You know, I was watching a great video, I'll try and dig it up, talking about how things like preventative testing can have really bad results. And I forgot the actual medical term for it, or statistical term for it, but the simple way to kind of understand it is, let's imagine, out of 50 people, 20 people will eventually die of prostate cancer. So if these 50 people come in with symptoms, right, on their own without any, you know, preventative scanning, any screenings, they'll come in and you'll see, oh my gosh, you know, 20 out of those 50, two fifths, you know, died of prostate cancer, right? And so you think, oh, this is terrible. We should start screening. So now you screen people. But the issue is now instead of, you know, those 50 people that the screening will detect, it'll actually detect 100 people that have some sort of symptoms. But the issue is before, out of those 100 people, those 50 you added by screening, they could have lived their whole lives with like some very, very, very slow growing or something that grows and then, you know, your immune system attacks it on its own kind of prostate cancer. But the problem is you treat those people. And so you think you're successful, right? Because at the end you're like, wow, now it's only 2 out of 10. That's like, we've like doubled the like survivability of prostate cancer. But in reality, what you've done is you've subjected those 50 people that would have been fine otherwise to things like surgeries and invasive testing and like other risks and surgical side effects to deal with a, you know, prostate condition that they could have lived with their entire life. And we
that
sort
is
of
fascinating.
I forgot the name, but I wish I could remember the name of it. But you can see where this is a concern even with something like COVID, right? There's tons. We talk about asymptomatic carriers, right? You know, people that get it and they can go on and be fine. And you say, oh, well, they could spread. Well, they also could not, right? And you know, we're doing all these. We're people seem to say that these screenings are like platonically good. And after watching that and like thinking about medical screenings in general, I was like, well, maybe this, you know, maybe there's something to this, right? You know, obviously the screening test for a while there was pretty invasive, but I mean, sticking a Q-tip basically and rubbing it against your brain, but even more than that, right? Like, we don't know. We know that we know a lot of things about the virus now that we didn't know before, and we know how sort of medical treatments work and what can go wrong and what can go right and the kind of statistical errors that could be made. But I don't know that a lot of people are actually applying all of that knowledge yet. It's going to take us time to apply all that knowledge. And like you said, the fact that most viruses, we would have been dead 10,000 years ago if viruses always mutated for the worse, right? Thank God they mutate randomly and natural selection does the rest.
Well, I think William, certain people, hold on, Daniel, two things, yeah. And one's for you, Daniel. But the first thing is, I think, William, they did die out back in the day. And what I mean by that is, I'm not being serious, but the tests for COVID, where they stuck that Q-tip in there, do you remember when you would go like to the museums and they would show you the tools for ancient Egyptian embalming, where they would pull the pharaoh's brains out through their nose? I think they all just had COVID and they were trying to stop the spread.
Thank you.
And this one's for you, Daniel. Something else that William said reminded me of something Adam and Dr. Drew talk about all the time, and we need to get in an Adam and Dr. Drew reference for your final show here, Daniel. They talk about back pain,
Tom Brady,
and back surgery. That's for me, not for him.
I was getting there, by the way. They talk about back surgery, yes.
Were you going to say that, the back surgery thing, or you want me to say
No. I was getting you back on track very quickly instead of off on a Tom Brady tangent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they talk about back pain, and they say having the surgery actually is worse. It makes your life worse. It exposes you to drug addiction, to opiate addiction, to the possibility of more surgeries. And it's what William's talking about. I'm going to make a connection here to what William said. It's this platonic ideal of the system can handle it, the medical system can handle it, rather than just figuring out what your values are and what your risks are and the exposure that way. And that's what we did with this whole COVID thing, Daniel. It's not Adam and Dr. Drew approaching it with risk management and risk assessment. It's just the system can handle it. The health system has to treat this.
That is good. Yes. I just want to synthesize both your point and William's point. into basically the same point, but maybe repackaged slightly differently, which is something I've been thinking about lately in terms of medical folks, and especially as it relates to the protests, whatever, is the concept of do no harm. Do no harm. First, do no harm. And what does that mean, essentially? It's the idea that, yes, we want to treat people, right? We want to make them better. We want to bring them back to health, back to a state of health from a state of unhealth. But first and foremost, don't do things if it's going to harm them, or if we don't know it's going to help them, or if it's a high unlikelihood that it won't help them. People can clarify that or nitpick with my words. But here's the thing. In the concept, when we're talking about quote-unquote public health, which we've talked about a ton in terms of corona, the concept of do no harm has to be taken a lot more seriously than even when it is on the individual level, because you're making mass decisions for a number of people and you don't know what the outcome is going to be. Specifically with the coronavirus stuff, we made quote-unquote public health decisions about locking people in their homes for multiple months, stopping them from going outside, stopping them from engaging in sunlight and exercise and all these things that are important for them, based off of what? We'd never done that before in the history of humankind. We had no idea what the outcomes would be. Shouldn't the principle have been first do no harm? Because, by the way, it turns out that 2/3 of people got this from staying in their homes and contracting it from other family members, and not people who went outside and actually engaged in exercise and activity. So, hey, government, hey, public health officials, how about you take that concept of do no harm and actually think it through for a moment, especially as it relates to the mass application of quote-unquote treatment to hundreds of millions and billions of people. End rant.
Yeah. Good job. I love when people rant on this show and everyone else is just like, yeah. That's when you know you hit something.
Okay. So speaking of hitting things, my television or lack thereof, screen, whatever, I want to hit it often in regards to the media because they're just terrible. It's been a running theme on this show is if that Trump got one thing right, it's that the media is the enemy of the people. And NBC, CNN, CBS, almost every single major news outlet fell for a viral hoax this week and used it, in fact, to stoke racial tensions. So on Monday, June 1, NBC reporter Ben Collins and Brandi Zadranzi broke a story that the white supremacist group Identity Europa were infiltrating the mass protests that have ravaged the U.S. since the death of George Floyd with the intention of inflaming racial tensions. It was a shocking story, a white supremacist group posting as Antifa, threatening to bring violence to the suburbs. On Tuesday, Collins appeared on MSNBC with anchor Stephanie Ruhle to discuss the episode, and on Twitter, where the story was enthusiastically shared by numerous Twitter-verified journalists, Collins opined, quote, "I have been taken aback by the amount of screenshots of the fake Antifa account actually run by white nationalists circulating on hyperlocal neighborhood apps like Nextdoor. Frightening indeed, except for one thing. It was not true." The account that was referenced that authored the tweet about bringing violence to the suburbs is a prolific troll known to run several parody Twitter accounts, including a fake Chick-fil-A account and a fake UPS customer service account. Over several years, he is one dude with no connections to Identity Europa or any other white supremacist group or anything, really, other than an Ethernet cable in his mother's basement. And you know, it's somewhat understandable that they fell for a parody account. That happens to the best of us. But what is really shockingly unacceptable is how far they ran with it without doing basically any digging or legwork to see if it was true at all. Justin, are you surprised in the least by this story?
This story does not surprise me at all on any level. There are multiple levels of the story that are just so emblematic of what's troubling, what's wrong about our culture right now. I mean, the idea that one person who just goes online to make fun of everything can stir this much trouble is ridiculous. There was a reason we had communication gatekeepers before, and we need to figure out how to balance this new anyone can say anything with the gatekeeping. And then I'm also not surprised that the media ran with this, because I think they were looking for a rationalization to run with this approach. Now, before I continue down that rabbit hole, I have to get this straight. I just need to get the story straight. So the idea is, there was a white supremacist group posing as Antifa. That was the idea, that there was an Antifa hoax was the idea. But in actuality, Correct. There was somebody pretending to be a white supremacist group pretending to be Antifa. That's what really happened. Am I correct?
I think so.
That's so fucking confusing.
But I don't even think... So here's where it gets a tiny bit confusing. I don't even think the hoaxer was intending to come off as a white supremacist pretending to be Antifa. I think there was a mistaken identity thing because of the letters I and E, which is something he's been using for a while on other parody accounts, but it's also an identifying logo for Identity Europa, which, by the way, was defunct as of 2019. And so I think the media sort of applied that layer to it.
Right. That goes back to the rationalization point, Daniel. The media was looking, the left was looking for an excuse to raise up the boogeyman of white supremacy. This is what I started the episode with. Look, white supremacy is evil. I'm going to say that just to get that out of the way so nobody fucking tries to say I'm a white supremacist and nobody tries to say I'm a fucking racist, all right?
You're right.
Collectivism in all its forms is racist. But Daniel, would you agree with my assessment that I am pretty familiar with the country, with the culture across the country, across the United States of America, because I've lived and traveled to many places throughout this country?
Well, you've lived in the Northeast. You've lived as far west as you can live. You've lived in South Carolina, and now you live in the great state of Florida. So you've probably got a good cross-section of the United States, yeah.
Right, and I've traveled elsewhere as well. I've traveled throughout the South. I've traveled in the Northwest, right? I've traveled throughout the Northeast. So I've seen most of this country. I have, you know, I still need to see the Dakotas, Montana, Idaho, those kind of places. I still want to see, like, Mount Rushmore. But my point in saying this is, in my experience, and I know, anecdotal, blah, 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 blah. When I have been around people, I have not seen people say intentionally or give any sort of unintentional indication that they are a white supremacist, or if they did express some sort of racist belief, that they were effective in actuating it or intended to actuate it. In contrast, I have encountered a high number of leftist Marxists who openly express their ideas, openly express disdain for this country, and openly attack people. We had Midsider Katrina 3 years ago get attacked by Antifa. I actually, the band Handguns, if you know, they do the opening. They tweeted a picture of Captain America, and they put Antifa on it. And I replied to them. I said, Antifa attacked my friend and put her husband in the hospital because they were standing in line on a college university waiting to go to a speech. And they were like, man, that's fucked up. And I said, yeah, I know. I love you guys. And they deleted the tweet because this is what the media does. They raise up these boogeymans, and most people who do not have the time to look into this stuff buy into what the media is saying because that is their source of information. Or perhaps they're not as hypervigilant as I am. Perhaps they don't make connections as well as I do. Perhaps they haven't built their analytical skills as well as I have, so they don't see these things. They don't understand that when I'm sitting in the hot tub in California and a guy comes down and puts his phone out and plays loud music, and I get up and say, I'm leaving because that's rude, and he tells me that that's my white privilege speaking, they don't understand those connections. I have had more instances of those events happen than I have any actual racism against minorities. I have lived, like you said, Daniel, in the South where people say it's prevalent. Dude, you were in South Carolina with me. I did not see anyone have any problem with the black people on campus. Am I crazy? Am I crazy? So this is, to me, the media was looking for something to rationalize running with this story. So they ran with this, and now we're Gaslight Nation because everything is literally white supremacy. And now these protests have become about more than police brutality, which I agree with. End police brutality. It's a fucking problem. We all have to be afraid of the cops. We all have to be. Maybe black people have to be more afraid because maybe racists are drawn to it. Maybe part of the problem with all this is that people who want to commit violent actions against people they hate are drawn to a position where they can do it legally. Did we ever think of that? But I agree. But now this whole thing has fucking become, we need to upend the entire United States of America because it's built on systemic racism. And I can hear them now, and I'll throw this back to you after I make this final statement. I can hear them now. Well, this is just the person who's so blind to his own white privilege. This is just a white person thralling against time. He's on the wrong side of history, and history will look down upon him. No, I'm sorry. This is where I'm talking about Gaslight Nation. I firmly believe I am not on the wrong side of history, and I firmly believe that I am correctly assessing reality. That means either I'm insane or you're insane.
Why can't you both be insane? I'm just kidding.
Well, we can, but in this case, what's the other option?
Well, it gets back to the religious fervor, right? Like this is exactly the New Testament, right? We've got original sin. We've got the Savior figure. George Floyd will rise from the dead in 3 days. Is that how it's supposed to work? I don't know. And then, you know, meanwhile, we've got this is just in the media, right? Like, I'm not talking about reality because you actually talk to people. I think most people get this, right? Like, people are talking to the rioters and getting the truth, and the truth is getting out there to people. I know we talked about before, Sophia Narowitz has been covering it on the ground. She had a great podcast on YouTube on the Weekly Sip on Short Fat Otaku's channel, where she talks about covering the protests, and you know, she was actual boots on the ground. And there's been others here in LA, boots on the ground, talking to or witnessing and documenting the protests and how they, you know, and then the rioters as well, people, you know, driving by and passing out bricks to people. We know what's going on. And so I don't think people are falling for it. And I think we've talked about before, you know, I'm usually quite optimistic about things, and I am optimistic here in the long term, but can you guys imagine what the RNC is going to be this year, or the election when Trump wins in a landslide? Like, what are these unhinged folks going to do in those situations?
Well, I think that is a horrifying road to go down, and not something I would like to consider. I'm hoping that that the election will just go away and we'll just all forget about it because we'll be so up in our own fervor about whatever that no one gets to win the presidency and we just don't have one for a few years. That would be my ideal outcome for that. But I think before we move on to the next story, which continues to frame this discussion, I have a woker joke for you, Justin, which is, 2020 is actually good because it subverts expectations.
That's a tough one. I'm going to say that is meta because that sounds like the way people were defending the Last Jedi. That's the exact argument I've heard defending The Last Jedi. It's, the Last Jedi is actually good because it subverted all the expectations by not being Star Wars. Okay. So I'm going to think that whoever wrote that headline is making fun of that line of reasoning that people use in the hipster world.
So you're going to say...
Joke.
William?
Just discovered or uncovered a couple weeks ago, you know, they're remaking He-Man, just like they remade She-Ra, and He-Man will not be the main character. So this is definitely a joke.
You're both right in this case, and it is, in fact, a phenomenally brilliant headline from thehardtimes.net, our favorite satire site. So,
did they mention The Last Jedi in the article?
I didn't read the article. I rarely read the articles for Woke or Joke, just to be clear.
I have to look to see if they mentioned it, because it's going to start sounding like I wrote these articles.
Yeah. Interesting. They don't mention it explicitly, but listen to this line. In any event, fast forward to now. Let's talk about it. The 400-pound pandemic in the room, coronavirus. If you have told us we'd spend a chunk of this year quarantined in our home, we would have said, no way. That's just terrible writing. We already did the plague thing in the original trilogy. Why would we repeat it?
They were referencing it.
It's the last line. That said, The Last Jedi still sucked. That's the last line.
Yeah. So that was they were doing exactly what I said. The hard times is my spirit animal.
Wow. Okay. That is incredible, Justin. That is truly incredible.
I want to be clear because some fucking person who watches magic and like talks about like, oh, that's how they did that trick. I was not aware of this at all. I have intentionally not followed the hard times for all the Woker joke stuff. So I literally, that is the way my brain works. Okay. That was real. That was not a fucking stage trick. That was real.
That was fantastic. Well, you know what's not fantastic, Justin, is your silence on social media. White silence on social media. Why not saying anything is actually saying a lot. This is a CBS News opinion piece. Black people across the country have taken to the streets and to their social media feeds to plead through protest that Black Lives Matter and enough is enough. But amidst all the noise and all the hashtags, many say there is nothing quite as deafening as white silence. Because for all the people who have flooded social media with George Floyd's name, images, and countless heartbreaking stories of racism in action, there are just as many, and possibly even more, who have borne witness to the pain in Black communities and chosen to say nothing. It's incredibly harmful, said Broadway star Jelani Alladin, and you're telling me that you have no hesitation posting a selfie of yourself or what you're eating for dinner, and yet you're telling me that you're afraid to say something because you might hurt other people's feelings, or you don't know what to say, or you don't have an audience to reach? Were you thinking those things when you posted the other photos? I don't think you were. Justin, what does your white silence say?
I can't answer that question. I don't have an answer to that question. But this is what I referred to earlier, isn't it? Didn't I call it racism 22? That no matter what a white person does, the white person is racist?
Yes.
Yeah, it's the same concept. So if you say something, you're racist because you're taking away time from... You're taking away space. That's the thing they love saying now, right? Space. They use this nebulous concept, this abstract concept of this platonic ideal, perhaps, of space. You're taking away space from minorities. You're taking it away by talking. Stop talking. But then if you don't talk, they just call you racist. I mean, the professional wrestler CM Punk.
Well, we already found out from my opening bit that you're supposed to stand on the outside, Justin, and use your body as a shield.
Right. So ultimately, the only way to not be racist is just to give your mind and body over to minorities and let them do with it as they see fit, right? That's what you're saying, William. That's the answer.
That's the answer.
Perhaps that may be an answer. But professional wrestler CM Punk called out professional wrestler AJ Styles, who's from Georgia, and he's like, oh, he's posting his video game streams on Twitch. Obviously, he's racist. This is a way of them getting their point of view to be socially accepted without having to prove it. They think if they make everyone accept it, it'll be real. Perhaps it's he doesn't agree with it. He doesn't want to to say something that could become a bad PR thing. So he's just keeping his mouth shut because he doesn't think it's worth the argument right now. You could say he's being wise and mature, but instead they've made it so even not saying something is a bad PR thing. It's absolutely insane. This is what I am talking about when I'm talking about Gaslight Nation. Except that there's white supremacy or you're a white supremacist.
I have a question for you, Daniel.
Oh.
During the, you know, terrorist attacks on, you know, Europe and America, other places, when people were pointing out the silence of some Muslim, you know, groups, people were calling that racist, right? Are those same people calling this statement racist?
I'm going to go with probably not.
Okay, so just
to be
clear,
I know that's going out on a limb here, but
if you're white and you don't speak out against white privilege, you're racist. But if you're Islamic and you don't speak out against, you know, throwing gays off of buildings or terror attacks, if you do ask people to speak out against that, then you're also racist.
It's
a non-win game here.
And this is, so there's two things that really trouble me about this. One is when this whole silence thing and not saying whatever, it's because when this person or whoever says it's racist or whatever, when I said at the beginning of the show, I don't know what racism means anymore. I mean, I think I know what it means objectively, but I don't know what anyone individually means by racism anymore. Racism is just a general derogatory word that we throw at people who we disagree with or who haven't conformed to whatever our view is. And so when people say, why haven't you spoken up or done something about racism today? My response is twofold. One is, I don't even know what you mean by that. And by the way, likely I'm not going to agree with what you specifically mean by that. And two is, I don't feel like I have to get up and denounce racism on a daily basis. Do you know what I do to fight racism on a daily basis, Justin and William? I'm not a racist. That's what I do to fight racism. I don't do racist things. I don't engage in racist behavior. I don't have racist thoughts. That's how I fight racism on a daily basis. But that whole thing is only one part of what really troubles me about all of this. The second part is much more rhetorical and frightening to me, which is, it honestly doesn't matter to me how righteous your cause is. Even if it was, let's say, take something that to me is totally non-controversial, if it was objectivism, for instance, and we had somehow gained control of the culture. Come on, guys, that's a joke. And we started saying, A is A. And if you don't actively promote that A is A on social media, well, then you're irrational or whatever. Like, you must actively promote our righteous cause.
Don't objectivists say that already to other objectivists?
My point is, the righteousness of your cause doesn't matter. When you start getting into this fervor of, yay, you over there, have you spoken out today? Have you said the right magical words today that will appease me?
Have you prayed
that
today? Have you?
Yeah.
Have you invited the Lord Jesus Christ into your heart today? Have you proselytized this week?
How about, have you heiled the Führer today? Yeah. Which is where we most recent, maybe not most recently, but one of the more prominent eras in which we saw this, which was, have you put your arm up today in praise of the Führer? My point is, when we start demanding that people say things that we think are virtuous and right, when we start demanding and then denouncing them for not saying the things that we consider to be virtuous, we are on a very clear path toward totalitarianism. Wow. Not like some muddy road to serfdom or whatever. We are on a very clear, well-mapped path to totalitarianism.
I have two things to say, Daniel. First of all, I'm going to get that drop about Hitler. And good thing you're not going to listen to the show while you're gone, because it's going to be all the time.
Oh, God.
And then second is this.
I am still privileged in some way.
So that is why you feel that way on their first point. You're still privileged in some way, clearly.
I am privileged in some way, mostly that I'm smarter than all of you.
Daniel, I agree with what you're saying. I think it's extra evil because it's disconnected from reality. And that's what makes it even
it
worse.
It is extra evil, but...
Right. And that's what... Like, I get what you're saying, and abstractly, you're 100% correct. For me, personally, though, and maybe this is just my brain, and I think this is one of the ways that I'm, you know, less like a philosopher and why I don't get along with objectivists and stuff, is... I just get pissed about the fucking fact that they're trying to bully me into accepting anti-reality. That's what I get upset about. Like, we can talk about that point all day, and I agree with it. That's a concern that comes up when we're past this stage, where we're past the stage of trying to be bullied to accept anti-reality. Then we can start talking about this, this rhetoric. I mean, I've seen this rhetoric in the Snyder Cut movement, right? Oh, if you don't donate to, you know, the American Society for Suicide Prevention, you're not really a Zack Snyder fan. You don't really support the Snyder Cut. Oh, if you don't say that Zack Snyder's movies, Superman movies, are about Muslim immigrants, you're not really a Zack Snyder fan. So it happens everywhere, and, you know, that concern I have in that group as well. But at least they were fucking fighting for the reality of getting the movie released. What really upsets me about this situation is being forced, they're trying to bully and force people to accept what isn't true, what isn't real. I mean, look, I got into an argument with my fiance about this, about the whole white supremacy thing. She was like, so you don't think white supremacy exists? And I, because I didn't want to, like, go into the, you know, the whole, like, well, flat earthers exist, so blah, blah, blah. I said, no. And she said, really, you don't think they exist? And so I went there. I said, look, people believe everything. There's somebody out there who believes anything. So, yeah, they exist. And then she kept pushing. And she was like, you really don't think they exist? And I fucking hung up on her. I hung up on her because it's like, I'm not going to fucking, like, I already told you my stance. If you want to have a real conversation with me, I'll have it. But I'm not going to sit there and have people ask me the same question incredulously because they've been taught to believe that. Think about what I'm saying. Don't just dismiss me because, oh my God, he doesn't believe in the orthodoxy, as you all are saying. And then she took it a step further where she Googled and found a website, which... for fuck's sake, she didn't even do this intentionally, was in Kissimmee, Florida. And it was a white nationalist group that used the Nazi logo from Kissimmee, Florida. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? How did the website she find actually be in Kissimmee, Florida? And then I was like, all right, I got to look at this website. So, by the way, I'm probably on the FBI watch list right now.
Careful.
Yeah.
And so I'm six levels in a membership now. And
right. No, that's the point. I'm probably on the FBI watch list. But I looked at it, right? So I clicked on it, and it was like they had all these national chapters. And I clicked on the national chapters to see. The national chapters, everyone was just a link back to the same email address. Then I clicked on their officers list. There was four people listed, and then a whole bunch of open positions. So this supposed national white supremacist group had four members and put up all this other stuff to make it look like they had more people than they did. Contrast that with all of these Marxist left-wing groups. And I have to sit here and have these fucking arguments about white supremacy because people make movies like American History X.
Or The Watchmen.
In the movie.
Or Watchmen TV series.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you saw me, I got into that trouble on Twitter this week, where I was like, look, can we look at the Watchmen series now? It was about police riots, police brutality, it was about race riots, police brutality, and people wearing masks to fight each other over race relations. And the greatest enemy in that show is a white supremacist group inspired by Rorschach. You want to do that show? You want to put a white supremacist group in there? Fine. Where's your cognate group? Where's your Antifa group? Where's the discussion of which group is more dangerous? Have a real discussion. Do you think it's a coincidence, Daniel? I'm going to ask you this. Daniel, do you think it's a coincidence that show came out right before all of this stuff happened? and it has that position of Rorschach creating a white supremacist cult, and that it, by accident, he didn't do it on purpose, and that is the greatest villain in that show, and now everyone's talking about the white supremacy in here, where the fucking white supremacist website my fiance found had four fucking members.
It's a narrative that seems to work with people because, look, we inherently don't want to be called a racist. And it's also very easy. It's an easy virtue signal to say, well, of course I denounce white supremacy. And so once you sort of have those things, then you can ramp up the narrative as much as you want and say, well, that's all good, but it's really more prevalent than you think it is. And you're going to need to do more in order to combat it. But the point you brought up earlier, Justin, that was anecdotal about having never met a white supremacist or seen white supremacy in action, insofar as it really is objectively white supremacy and not some made up nonsense straw man. The question is, like, in civil society, if someone were to just openly be a white supremacist, like, it would be this incredible anomaly. And that person would lose friends, they would lose loved ones, it would be difficult for them to hold a job. We've seen people get fired over, the Philadelphia Inquirer editor was fired over a headline talking about how buildings and, like, businesses mattered too, because he used the matter word and it wasn't about Black lives. He was fired over that. Like, we are so caught up, and not just during these protests, just in general in the past 20 years-ish, or let's not say that long, 10 years-ish, we are so caught up in not being racist that if someone were openly racist, openly white supremacist, they would be ostracized from civil society. So they just don't exist.
Before you continue, I'm just going to stop you real quick. I forget the last 10 years or whatever bullshit's going on. If somebody expressed Nazi ideas, I would have no interest in being friends with that person.
Well, of course. Of course.
I'm going to add one caveat to you there, Daniel. As long as it's against minorities.
Right. As long as it... Right. That's correct. There is a form of racism. I was going to get around circling back to there's a way in which all this is true, but we'll get to that in a moment. Point being, it would be such an anomaly that we would notice it, right? The fact that folks like Richard Spencer, who was a white nationalist, garnered so much attention was because he was an anomaly. Because he was something we could all point to and say, that's bad. And there is no massive white supremacy movement in the United States. There hasn't been in a very long time. And in the way in which there is racism and prevalent racism in the United States is in the fact that we continually to put everything into groups and talk about how these groups all think the same and are the same and do things the same, whether it's Black people or white people or brown people or Latinks or whatever it is, we put them all in these groups and say, hey, they act a certain way or they should do a certain thing.
I think it's supposed to be Latinx.
Latinks? I have no idea. I've literally never heard it said.
I literally just thought you said a racial slur for someone who was both Latin and Chinese. That's what I thought you said at first.
I've never heard it said out loud. And that's someone who's half Mexican. I've never met another person who said it out loud. So, Justin, this will make you happy because the extent to which there is explicit, open racism in America, it is the collectivism pushed on us on a daily basis, primarily by the progressive left or the social justice left, but increasingly by all intellectuals, because there is virtually no one out there embracing individualism, save for a few heroes who shall not be named on this show. Justin, being one of them. That is the explicit racism in our culture today. Collectivism is the explicit racism that we allow in our culture today. That is acceptable.
I mean, that's where I'm going with the next story, so I'm going to remain silent. So, William, if you have anything you would like to add.
I'm going to to observe my social science, or my silence, my white silence, in order to properly follow the guidance.
Well, very good. The next story is a Vox story. It's called "The Real Problem with the New York Times Op-Ed Page." It's not honest about U.S. conservatism. I'm not really going to quote from the article much. The concept here is that, so the New York Times got a lot of heat recently for publishing a, because, by the way, this story is from 2018. Just, I don't know if you guys knew that, if you wanted to set it up that particular way or whatever, but it's weird that it's pertinent, because the New York Times got in a ton of quote-unquote trouble from the woke left recently for publishing an op-ed by U.S. Senator Tom Cotton, who's a conservative. Many New York Times staff called in sick the next day, sort of in protest, and they've sort of apologized and whatever. But the idea here is that the New York Times is generally trying to give voice to people they consider to be good conservatives, quote unquote, like David Brooks and Senator Tom Cotton, whatever, when they're promoting ideas that they like, namely that they're bashing Trump or promoting things that the left finds attractive. But the left isn't happy about this, right? The left wants the New York Times to not give platforms to quote-unquote conservatives and not give platforms to these ideas that are secretly white supremacist, according to their nonsense, or secretly nationalist or racist or whatever it is. But there is a much bigger problem here that they are not talking about, either the New York Times or the left. And that problem, Justin, is...
collectivism. And I did intentionally set it up that way with the timeline, because this shows how they've been seeding this for years.
Yeah.
How are they discussing the ideas? They're not. They're discussing the group, and then they're saying because of the group, they have bad ideas. Now, if you want to say here are the bad ideas and people who tend to be conservative tend to have these ideas, that would be an honest discussion. Now, we can't, by the way, if we were to say any of that about race, oh, here are bad ideas, here are people from this X race that tend to have these ideas, well, that would be racist. So even that's considered the proper form of that sort of induction would even be considered racist. But here we see how for years they've been doing it, and how for years the media... and the far left media has been coding that being a member of a group, or they call being a member of a group, believing a certain way is the same thing as evil. And this is another thing where I get frustrated about, Daniel, William, with the way the fucking just, I really believe, and I said this in a private conversation with Daniel earlier this week, I really believe there is a lot of mental illness in the world today. I 100% believe that, because you will fucking see on Twitter, and I actually tweeted out earlier today, the day of recording this episode, that Twitter is basically unusable at this point. Somebody will really fucking reply and say, oh man, the media is so right wing and all you conservatives think it's so left wing. Well, that's how you're fucking insane. Well, to me, the person saying that is insane. Okay. I do not consider myself right wing. I consider myself the mid-side, right? There are things about the right I hate. There are things about the left I hate. And by and large, the media is far left, trying to promote socialism, trying to promote Marxism. And then fucking people will sit there and say, oh, the media is right-wing. I saw that in college. I saw that at Ithaca College, where in my intro to mass media class my freshman year, they told me these big conglomerates are running the media, so they're right-wing because businesses are right-wing. Well, fuckers, who ran Disney for years? Michael Eisner. Where did he go to college? Ithaca College. Oh, you think he didn't learn that at Ithaca? If I learned it at Ithaca, he learned it at Ithaca. And what did he do with Disney? After he left, what did it become? More left wing. Was it Eisner or was it the guy? Oh, no, it was Bob Iger. I'm sorry. Bob Iger is the guy who just left. Eisner. I have to double check. You guys talk and I'm going to double check which one. But I'm pretty sure it was Bob Iger who went to Ithaca.
Yeah, William, we hear a lot of the similar things about the media, and including criticism from the left, that they're giving too much of a platform to views on the quote unquote right. What is the end game here?
Yes, Bob Iger.
Yes. Is the end game here that popular media should just not be a platform at all for any dissent whatsoever? Like, I mean, and that's not a facetious question. Is that literally the end game?
Yeah, I think it gets back to the, because of this lack of going back to individual values and individual rights and individual responsibility, we're left with this this idea that without people gatekeeping and filtering and telling you what's right and wrong, that you can't make your own judgments and decisions, and therefore you know, we need these kinds of protections. We need to protect people. Like, people could, you know, go down the right, the what do they call it, the far right rabbit hole. Was that New York Times article? But it's even worse.
Yeah,
than
I remember that one.
Since we've conflated violence and speech, you know, for example, the riots that smashed the window at my store, which we haven't really dug in, you know, we dug into a little bit. You know, that's not violence, right? But if I misgender a trans person, that's violence. And it's very weird that we would hold, you know, words where I would be, you know, canceled from my job and, you know, banned from Twitter and all those other things. Will Twitter be issuing any bans if I identify the people who smashed the window at the store? Will they be banning them from Twitter? I mean, that's off-platform behavior, right? Like, we've already found out that that's, you can be banned for stuff like that. But will they be?
It's interesting.
Daniel, William's answer to your question really points to what upsets me more than anything. And it's why I've started saying this term Gaslight Nation and why I've started ranting about mental illness. Because it is worse. It is more insidious than saying we need someone to tell us what to think. It's not just we're going to have the media tell us what to think. It's not just we're going to have the health officials tell us what to think. It's there's a class of people who really believe their purpose in this world, because they have morality on their side, is to tell us what to think. And to me, that's where the gaslighting comes in, and that's the mental illness. They're disconnected from reality, but they're so convinced that they have reality on their sides that they tell you that you're the one who's disconnected from reality. And that's the scary thing to me. We need it so everybody can do what William just said. Everybody can say, I'm going to stay, quote unquote, in my lane, as they say. I'm going to live my life for myself, and I'm going to judge reality for myself and live based upon that. But we now have people who have decided, while believing in subjectivism, that they're going to judge reality for everybody else. And as William just said, if they bash your head in for not accepting their reality, that's not violence. Your violence is simply not believing what they say is reality. And that's why I call it mental illness, because that's fucking insane. There's no way I can look at it. If I accept that that's a legitimate point of view, it fucking destroys my brain. So I have to accept it as insane. I have to accept it as mental illness. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Just to close this out, there's a way to face reality and to change reality. And if you choose persuasion and production, that will lead to happiness for you and a change in reality that you will be proud of. If you choose violence, and here I'm not using the leftist term violence, violence, then you will not be happy. And that's really the takeaway of this. We've got a lot of unhappy people around here. And the individual choices are what is making this so. To get back to what Daniel was saying earlier about how do I not be racist? Well, I not be racist every day, right? Like, how do I know I'm not a racist? Because I'm not racist every day. look at my behavior, I look at my values. And that's what.
And Daniel, I think that was well stated, and I'm going to add one small thing to that to make it a little more fine and toss it to you. I would put production before persuasion because I think a large issue with what's going on is second-handedness, being more concerned about other people than you are about yourself. And I think you have to put that production first. What are you doing with your life to make your life better? Then once you can do that, then you can persuade other people.
Yeah, I think that's right. You must build yourself before you can build a community. You must build yourself before you can build a relationship. You must build yourself before you can literally do anything else. Because without yourself, there's nothing to do. There's nothing to do anything. You're just a robot. You're just programmed. You're just the means to an end of someone else or someone else's ideas or whatever. You must build yourself first. That is the only way to do it, in fact. And one of the ways that you build yourself is by taking in inputs that are contradictory, sorting through them, and deciding what is true and what is right. When you keep out everything that you disagree with, when you keep out anything that may cause you mental anguish because it's something you despise or it's something that you've been told is evil, that doesn't make you stronger. That doesn't make you a better person by keeping those things out. To use an Adam Carolla phrase, it atrophies your mind because you are never facing resistance. You are never facing tension. You are never facing ideas that challenge anything about the way you think, and thus your brain atrophies. You need that tension in your life. You need disagreement. You need views that contradict your own for you to decide if your views are true or not, if they are based on reality. And when you don't have that, you become a worse person for it, not a better person.
Sounds like going to the gym.
It is a lot like going to the gym. It's your muscles, and it all works sort of metaphorically, at least the same way.
All right, I think that's a great place to end, and I think it's good to give Daniel the final word here. So what did we learn this trip, William?
I learned that it is my white male gay privilege to have my shop window smashed during the riot.
Daniel?
I learned that the coronavirus is canceling itself over its own racism. Justin, what did you learn? And then a couple more Booker jokes.
I learned that, as I usually learn, apparently my righteous indignation is actually righteous. So I will stay indignant. Fuck you.
Woker joke. William, Swith brothels draw up a list of coronavirus safe sex positions.
That is definitely woke.
Justin?
I agree, that's woke.
Totally woke. Absolutely woke. They drew up positions so they can reopen. You can imagine what the coronavirus quote-unquote safe positions are. Justin, woke or joke?
Wait. They drew up positions so they could reopen their legs?
Well, that is their
all
business.
All glory holes. Yes.
Justin, woke or joke, does Tom Brady think COVID-19 was sent to make us all chill out?
Joke.
William?
Woke.
Woke, vice.com.
Yes.
In an interview.
Really?
Yes.
They're not making fun of all the people trying to say Tom Brady's racist and a science denier? Wow.
Nope.
Fucking Vice.
Let's see. William, woke or joke, Governor Whitmer orders citizens to barbecue indoors.
Oh, no. That's gotta be woke. Come on now. That's stupid enough for a politician to say.
Justin?
I agree. That's woke.
It is a joke. It's a great joke. Oh! By the Babylon Bee, who's writing unbelievably fantastic satire throughout this entire COVID situation. Two more, and then I'll be done forever, I promise. Justin, woke or joke, Portland bans urinals since women can't use them.
I'm going to go with joke, although I could see that being true, but nobody's that fucking retarded.
It's Portland. There's a possibility it's going to be woke, so just to get one up on Justin, I'm going to say woke.
It is woke.
Yes!
The headline's not perfect. They banned urinals in their new Portland government building. All the bathrooms will be gender neutral toilet bathrooms, no urinals.
It's funny. At my daytime employer, we have some gender neutral restrooms. All they did was put the privacy, kind of like they do around the toilet, around the urinal. So problem solved. But I don't know.
There you go.
Maybe even having the urinal there is oppressive.
It is, apparently. And then finally,
wait. No, I have a question. I have a challenge. I think that headline was unintentionally a joke because it so misportrayed the article. It was satirizing what actually happened.
Or is it just trying to be clickbaity?
I think it was.
I just want to add for all you people without penis, you definitely want men to have urinals to be in. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Or you could be this. This isn't the last one, but one I didn't do is why tiny dicks might come back into fashion. That's a woke article from Vice. But we'll leave you
who
with
wrote
this,
that?
Gentlemen.
An Asian. Ba-da-ching.
Oh, careful with that noise.
Yeah, I know. I know. I already thought it.
Last one we'll do for forever is Justin Woker joke. Pornhub sees spike in searches for groups of 10 or more people.
That is woke.
William?
I gotta take joke.
No, hold on. I will admit to going on a porn website just because of the fact that I know that's woke, because you go there and you click on the search bar and like there'll be shit like protest sex. And I'm like, do you fuckers really search for shit based on what's going on in the world? Like, really? You're like, the people are protesting right now. I should go watch a porn of people having sex during protesting. You watch porn too much if you do that.
Well, William takes the cake here. It
yes.
is, in fact, satire written by thehardtimes.net, which,
see?
Justin, you can now freely enjoy after this point. So congrats.
But see, that just proves that somebody did the same thing I did on Pornhub. That's how they wrote that article. See how I still think the way they think, even if I didn't catch the joke?
You are a genius, Justin. We hope you enjoyed this trip here into the Midside. If you did, why don't you go to all the social medias and follow at the Midside. And then you can go to the website and go to themidside.com/podcast, listen to all the past episodes, especially if you miss my horrifyingly sultry tenor voice. You can go back and listen to past shows for years and years and years and get your fill of me. And then you can subscribe on Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review so we can move past Welcome to the Beehive or whatever that show is. I've already forgotten. Welcome to Night Vale. That's what it was, which is probably defunct now. I have no idea. Point being, they suck, and we're better. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us. Our libertarian friends are awesome. And then Patreon.com/TheMidside, where you can go and give us a couple bucks every time we produce one of these things. Tell a friend about the show. And until next time, we love you.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Elmsnesky, reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.
I'm going to need all you social justice warriors to go ahead and form a safe space, a circle of bodies around the outside of the Midside. Thank you.
For a minute there, I thought you were doing a commentary on white silence. And I was stepping on it, but I got nervous.
Oh, man. A nervous have a day.